Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Cracked Podcast.
What if he forgot?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Cracked Podcast. You're on with your host, Mauricio Mookie Wilson. I'm so honored to have both of my two co-hosts on today. Let's give a big round of applause for Mr. Hurricane, aka Media. Let's hear it up for my man, DeMarcus Beasley.
Oh, you got me first. I like changing it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming all the way from the DMV, we like to call him the scholar, but today he's the professor. Let's give it up for a big man, Gucci.
Appreciate y'all. Appreciate it. Even brought my scholar glasses today, so.
Yeah, but why you got glasses on, though?
And why you got a hat on?
Why don't we just start off stabbing each other in the back? Right? Jesus.
Can a brother not have glasses today?
I'm just asking why you have glasses on. Because, yeah, right. You know, some people don't, they won't see the visual.
Because it's dark. I need my reading glasses.
I had an eye procedure,
so now I gotta let my eyes rest, and I'm wearing glasses. Thank you.
I'm just saying, it looked like you had a black eye. I thought somebody knocked you out.
It was you, DeMarcus.
Goose, ask him why he's wearing a hat.
I really want to know why he's wearing a hat.
Why you cut off your bangs? You want to get in? We can do this all day.
Did you have a procedure?
We're going to have a show.
You might have had a procedure. I'm trying to ask a question. Maybe you got
to
get a
replacement. We don't have a show right now.
Why did you cut off his bangs?
We can crack all day. I'm here for it.
Yo, Gooch, you got to watch out for him, man. He act like he the innocent one in the group. You see how he come cutting with a sword.
I just wanted to ask a question.
I wasn't ready for that one. I wasn't.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's all fun and games, but thank you so much for tuning in and joining us today. We're so happy to be back. We have a tremendous show. We're going to be joined a little bit later by, I think, the hottest and the coolest couple in soccer throughout the
icons.
Ali Krieger and Ashton Harris. We'll be joining us, U.S. national team players, World Cup players, Olympic winners. I mean, you name it. But recently just came out after a 10-year relationship and recently got married in 2020. So we're going to celebrate that and celebrate a little bit of love. As we all know, we need it. Today, we're coming to you with jokes and laughter and lots of love. But at the same time, we have something that it's kind of been, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, fellas. We're here with another moment, another tragedy that happened in the United States of America. We're going to talk about Jacob Blake a little bit and what's going on now here in Wisconsin. Bees, give us a little input and first time you heard about it and what's your thoughts?
I mean, the first time I saw it was on Twitter. Yeah. But I'm disgusted, man. It's the same shit that keeps happening over and over and over. And everybody that comes out with reasons why he got shot.
Yeah.
If you have to ask a reason why he got shot, you're part of the problem right there. You know what I'm saying? And if he might have had a gun or might have had a knife, or whatever, that don't mean that you shoot the man 7 times in his back. You know, so we've seen videos of how cops deal with white people. Mm-hmm. And there's a video circling around when a dude had a taser and the dude's yelling and pushing the cop and the cop still has a taser in his hand.
Yeah.
You know, there was no gun pulled. He even got into the cop car and almost tried to drive away, you know, and that's the difference. And people still don't understand that. They're acting, oh, well, why this? Why? I mean, you see him getting hype. I'm just, I'm angry. Disgusted that this shit is still going.
And that's the main word though, Bees, right? Is angry.
Yes.
Right. It's, and you can't fault for feeling that way. You know, it's just like enough is enough. I think is a feeling that everybody feels. Enough is enough. Stop. Tired of being politically correct. At the end of the day, the man, no matter what charges he had or what felonies he might have had or what warrants he had on him, the man who's a human
being. Is a human being. Thank you. Thank you.
And that's what comes about Black Lives Matter, Professor.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I put it up on my Instagram today, and it's funny the responses I got from, I don't know these people. So if you want to call them fans or peeping Toms, whatever you want to say.
Your followers.
Call them followers. All right. Well, I don't call them followers when they hit back at something like this, right? And so I wrote, how is Jacob Blake seen as a deadly threat for a theoretical weapon that he might have or might use to commit a crime and then shot 7 times in the back? Then, to follow that up, but a white gunman who was armed and already shot people.
Two people.
Who showed that he was a threat, was arrested the following day and given full due process and treated like a human being whose life matters.
But you forgot one thing in that scene. He went to the cops with his hands up, and the cops rolled right past him. He's got a AR-15 on his shoulder. Running by the cops, and the cops didn't even stop him.
The man
didn't say nothing, and then you can hear everybody yelling in the video saying that was him. He's the one that shot. The cop just rolled right past him.
Mm-hmm. Brother, he slept the night in his own bed.
In his own crib, yeah.
In his own bed.
Wow. But you know, the worst part about it is he was out there all day, all night.
Ain't even from Wisconsin.
The cops, exactly, he crossed the border. And the cops looked at him as he's one of theirs, right? He said, actually, they have it on video that he said to them, or one of them made a statement saying the cops told him that, listen, we're going to push them down there so you can handle them, meaning the protesters, you know? And he's not guarding his father's family business. He picked a business that already was, I guess, looted or what have you. And he chose to stand in front, and he went there looking for trouble. He went there for confrontation. Right. You don't carry a big weapon like that, not looking for confrontation. Right. And it had the audacity people to say he's protecting himself. He's not in his home where somebody's breaking in or somebody's chasing him. It's ridiculous. And I said, enough is enough. And I'm tired of the bullshit.
Yeah, and then another thing. This the one of the problems that we have right now is the people of power, the people that can affect change don't. If you heard the chief of police in Wisconsin, he put out a statement that night and said the problem, the biggest issue was that they're out past curfew.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? He didn't say nothing about the murder that happened in his streets.
Yes.
He said, oh well, if they went out past curfew, then that wouldn't happen. And he said the 17-year-old that was from Illinois He came to resolve whatever was happening in his city. You know what I'm saying? Like he didn't call it a murder. He's basically saying that happens because it's okay. What happened?
Gentlemen, are we surprised? Don't we realize that?
But that's the problem, though. You got the chief of police saying that shit that. It wasn't even a murder.
I mean, we unfortunately, in the beginning of this pandemic, all the riots, George Floyd's death, everyone's, you know, speaking and protesting. And to answer your question, are we surprised? No, we're not surprised, because this is not new to this year. This is not new to the last 2 years. This is not new to the last 10 years, right? This is something that's been going on since the birth of this country.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? This has never not been here. For those people that are just recently woke, this is how this country has always been. This is how we have functioned blindly in this country up until recently. And I'm not surprised. It just hurts like every time.
Yeah.
And every time it's just like, all right, hopefully this is the last time.
Don't you guys think that, you know, it's only going to get worse leading up to November. And when I say worse, meaning that the backlash, right? You have the protesters, and you have the people like the 17-year-old kid who who shot and murdered two persons the other night. There's a lot more of them. Michigan, they showed you. There's a lot more than they ready. They want to. You know, I read something about the town that kid comes from. They said it's a small town. There's nothing to do. Kids are bored. They have no jobs. And he's sitting there watching internet, watching the Trump rallies, and he's feeling like that's something that he can live for. You know, why does a 17-year-old kid feel like he needs that? Why is a 17-year-old kid not looking to go to school, college, getting ready to go to get into the semester, go to community college, somewhere? Why is he worrying about trying
why is a business mother, that's not why in his town? Why is his mother picking him up? He's driving him.
Yeah. And he, if you look at his page, he's always shooting his guns. He's all about the blue.
Point is, he went there to murder people. That's what he wanted to do.
He wanted some action. He wanted some action. Yeah.
You're not going to protect a business that you don't even know about. You don't even know the business with guns, automatic weapons. You went there because you were hoping to shoot somebody. That's it. He was hoping to shoot. He didn't know who he was going to shoot. But he's like, tonight I'm going hunting.
And we discussed this because, you know, obviously the NBA, MLS, tennis players all decided to, you know, sports wasn't important and wanted to make a presence and wanted to make a statement by not playing the playoffs. That's huge. And I think we live in a moment where I didn't think I ever would see something like this, where players who are millionaires, young African-Americans would think about more than themselves, to think about the bigger picture, and would sacrifice their careers and their money for the wealth of the culture and the country. You know, if that's not patriotic, I don't know what is. You know.
Yeah, I was pleasantly pleased when I saw that, and I was like, wow, okay. Now, you know, everybody said that they're behind something to unify, but they're actually really showing it now. You know, and I appreciate that.
The great question, Bees, is what will it take to get the players back? Right, you sit out one game, and what's the difference? I think the easy statement is an arrest. Yeah. An officer,
yeah.
Right? He don't have to be, I'm not saying you have to put him in jail, but he has to be arrested. Arrested, charged with something, put on, make bail, and we move further from there and wait for the trial. And I hope that they express that, and that's what the NBA and kind of are pushing for. You know, we want the bigger picture, but for the immediate, we need that officer arrested.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, plain and simple. You want to see action. It's no more of the word. We saw that kneeling is not enough. You know, yeah. So now we need action. We see that there's some people that are woke and they understand why we kneel in the first place. But now it's about action. Now it's about putting these people behind bars, holding these people accountable, and just treating us like human beings.
That's it.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
or just caring.
Our biggest threat is not a gun. It's our black skin. Mm-hmm. And that's crazy. That's a crazy thing to say, but that's the truth.
That's the truth. And that's society have to teach your kids that, right? And that's you're supposed to be an American citizen. You're supposed to be somebody that you say, listen, we're taxpayers. We're people who, you know, help build this country. And what we're trying to say, Black Lives Matter. We're trying to say that the black flesh, the human being of a black man, the black woman does not equal the human being in the eyes of Caucasians, right? We don't get the same treatment, right? There's no reason that man shouldn't have walked away. Even if he was jumped in his car and you have his plates, you have three officers, right? And then for me, they punks, right? They punks. You have to shoot this man. There's three of you there. And you have to shoot this man. So obviously the department failed on training, the department failed on hiring, you know, and again, you know, enough is enough. And I hope, I pray that at least we can see an arrest coming this weekend, or if not tomorrow.
Today. Tonight. Yesterday.
Yes, sir. So we'll keep you guys posted and continue to bring attention, obviously, every time when things like this occur. And again, we'll circle back and have a conversation about this, and hopefully we can have a better update. Another tragic situation that some Barcelona fans might feel is Messi is out of here. Messi is out of here. It's reported that Messi put in a request to leave Barcelona. And where is he going? And I don't believe it.
I heard. I heard. I he's coming to Cincinnati, FC Cincinnati in the MLS. I don't know. You tell me.
I didn't see a report, but the picture wasn't messy, though.
Yeah, I think it was in Seattle. The general manager, I can't remember his name. Garth, I think his name is.
Yeah.
He even said that.
Garth Waverly.
He wouldn't be surprised if he saw Messi in the MLS within 12 to 24 months. Come on.
Yeah, come on, man.
Unless the MLS is giving him part ownership in the entire league.
The whole league.
But
so wait. Why don't you believe it?
I just know Barcelona, Messi, Barcelona.
But all this stuff that's been happening has been.
I know, but
from the season, you know. Yeah. What I'm saying? It's bigger than the players.
Definitely.
You know what I'm saying? It's bigger. It's all the, you know, with the elections they got going on. I heard that they're trying to move it up so they can get.
Out of there before Messi. I just think they're gonna sacrifice. Gonna do anything they can to keep that man.
Of course they will. That's what they're trying to keep the same buyout clause, which is $700 million, which is outrageous,
ridiculous.
And obviously Messi is trying to get around that. So
and with the fair play though, Bees, it's not that easy for him to just hop and skip.
No, of course not.
Yeah, it's Messi. So that's why I don't believe it. I don't believe that Messi in his heart really wants to leave. I think that maybe career-wise, obviously, it might be a good move. He doesn't want to rebuild.
Of course. I mean, he said it, though. He said he doesn't want to. He would love to finish his career in Barcelona.
Yeah.
But he wants to be – but the thing is, for him to be happy – and this is what he said, not what I think.
Yeah.
For him, they have to be winning titles. That's what – he's about
going
that's
for
what
titles.
He's always been going, for titles. Titles, having so, a chance to.
And so it's Coleman. It's Coleman, the new manager's job to try to convince them that they can still do that.
I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't.
But. Exactly. I mean, it's not that hard for Barcelona to regroup, right? One or two players and they keep it shaking, you know. But let me ask you, Professor, as a general manager for a Premier League club or MLS, how much would you spend on Messi? And how many years do you think Messi has left at the top level?
As a premiership club, I don't even know. That's a hard one, right? Because Messi has spent his whole career in La Liga. That doesn't necessarily mean that he'll be successful and that will translate to the premiership, right?
That's a bold statement, my brother.
No, it's not. It's true.
I love it. That's a bold statement.
Have you not seen Messi play?
What
Bees, you have never played in La Liga.
Are you agreeing with me?
I'm disagreeing with you.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, I didn't say he wouldn't. I didn't say he couldn't. I'm just saying you don't know. It doesn't automatically mean it will.
Why are you scared to go against you, man?
I'm not. I'm saying I disagree.
You are the best.
I thought you asked the professor. Am I not the professor?
You are the professor. You're the best person.
So please, class is in session. Please silence. Thank you.
Oh my God. So like I was saying,
I said that it doesn't automatically mean it will translate to the premiership. He's played in a league that his whole career, he knows the style of play. The premiership is different. It's different. I mean, there's no question about that, right? Could he be successful? 110% in the right form, in the right team that plays the right kind of football. Obviously, Man City is a great team that probably would fit his style of play. But how much would you pay for this man at 33 years old, saying that he's going to win you championships and Champions Leagues? Because he can't go to a team he goes to, that has to be a team that is a Champion League contender to win.
Of course.
That means a team has a lot of big money.
And then not even that, it's just, there's only a few teams that can even afford Messi, especially at this time.
The Manchester
From what I'm sure we've all read, you know, Man City, Man United.
Definitely not Arsenal.
Definitely not Arsenal. PSG. And I think maybe one of the Italian teams, maybe Inter Milan or
I think he's like I can see a PSG.
But it's not a lot of teams that can't even afford Messi.
I'll tell you why they're
gonna be like, yo, Messi, hey man, we know you Messi, but hey man, can you take about a $20 million pay cut? Can you do that for us?
Yeah. Come on, Messi.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
You got enough money.
There's only not even a handful, probably less than that, just because of the pandemic now that we're going through. I mean, man, that what I've heard is Man City, Man United, and PSG could only afford him.
But keep it real though, that jersey sale will probably almost at least do half of $700 million.
Yeah,
pay for.
But for all the naysayers that don't think he'll be successful, Man, y'all, they crazy.
Nobody said he wasn't going to be
successful. I didn't say you. See, I said naysayers. No, but, I said naysayers.
There hasn't been any naysayers yet.
How do you know? He has followers.
I read a lot of people that said that Messi won't be the same player. Messi won't be Messi in the Premier League.
But he showed you that, that he can't carry a team on his back by himself, correct? Right or wrong?
Can or cannot?
Cannot.
In 2020, he cannot carry a team by himself.
Barcelona didn't win the league.
They didn't win Champions
League. Did you see what this man did? Did you see his? And I'm not a stat guy.
I watch him play. I'm just saying. I'm not a stat guy.
Dude still had over 30 goals and over 20 assists.
Yo, Beans has turned into a stat guy.
CBS, baby.
He said, I'm not a stat guy.
That's why I call him Mr. Saying. Media, baby. Mr. Media.
What team, what club in the world would not want a 30 goal Messi?
But Beans, keep it real, right? Everything goes through Messi in Barcelona.
Yeah, and everything gonna go through him if you go to Man City.
All right, but going through him, they did not win the league. They did not win the Champions League. That is a fail.
Yeah, but okay, but when he was winning Champions League, who did he have with him? And I'm not saying that.
When you had him back in the day, that don't mean nothing.
Yeah, but okay, but the players don't. Okay, look, if you only have two or three players that's playing at the level that he needs,
Barcelona is not. You trying to tell me Barcelona didn't have enough players to win the Champions
League?
Listen,
can I finish? Can I finish?
They have enough quality.
Let me finish. All right. I'm saying they're all good. No. I was never ever at that level. I'm saying if they're not playing at that level of Barcelona, and they weren't. You saw, I mean, you don't get beat 8-2 for nothing. And that's, yeah. I'm talking about even when after the whole last season, they were up and down.
Yeah.
But if you don't have at least 8, 9, 10 players playing at the Barcelona level, yes, 100%. They're all good players. They're great and all that. But they weren't confident. They weren't playing well. You know, if you don't have that, you're not going to win. Doesn't matter what Messi does.
Yeah.
When they were winning, even though Iniesta and blah, 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 and all those guys that they had on the team, they were still all at a high level.
Definitely.
Every single one of those players were playing at a high level. This year, it wasn't happening.
Well, I'm asking a question. Who right now is not on a high level in Barcelona starting 11?
Everybody but Messi. I mean, okay, catch the joke though. You look at I'm just going by just one game. Trust me, I know it's throughout the whole season. I love Ter Stegen, but you need him to step up. That last game against Munich, he was terrible. You know, he wasn't good. But he's a great player. He had a bad game. Yes, you have bad games. I understand that. But to win games and to win championships, you need players. And Gucci, you need players to play at a different level every week. Most of the time.
Let's keep it real.
And they haven't done that.
There's only one team we can see Messi playing for, and that's Man City, style wise. I can't see him playing for Man City.
Pep is already texting him on WhatsApp. Like.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%.
Let's go.
And we all know that we can't see him playing in Man United for that. You know, I can see him playing at PSG. And I'll be honest, I can see him going to Juventus.
Ronaldo. The reason he can't go to PSG is because of his price tag and the French taxes.
Which
are so much worse than any other country.
Yeah.
So basically,
I thought Spain was worse.
No. France is the worst. You actually have to pay twice that. It's something stupid.
Yeah.
Like what they have to pay over in order for the player to get what they want. It's ridiculous.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, but speaking about old mans like Messi, let's go into some youth. Let's get a big round of applause for our guy, Weston McKennie. We just want to announce that he just completed his deal to go to Juventus. This is amazing. 21-year-old American footballer from U.S. men's national team, transferred from FC Schalke and Bundesliga to the Juventus to play for Pirlo. What type of miracle story is this? This is crazy.
It's crazy.
Doesn't happen every year, I'll tell you that much. Weston has been on a positive trajectory since he's left this country.
Since he left his country.
He's turned heads at Schalke, and unfortunately they had a less than great season this year and gave him the opportunity to leave and actually take a step back, to take two steps forward, right? To be able to land at Juventus. And Pirlo, I guess, making his mark in one of his first signings. Making Weston one of his first signings, and he obviously sees something special in this kid. I'm interested and anxious to see how his kind of style is going to translate to the Italian football, which is a lot more tactical and patient. And you know, Weston
than the Bundesliga.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Italy is just tactics. Like, but I mean, patience. And Weston's like a kind of a
he hates to be confined.
But listen though, if you listen to Pirlo's interview or his first as a head coach, that's what he wants. He wants energy. The way he wants to play is the way Weston plays. That's a perfect.
He said he wants to follow what he was doing at New York City FC and take
have that high intel.
Take that style of play to Juventus.
He wants to have that high intensity midfielders up and down the park. They lose the ball trying to get it, as soon as possible. And that's Weston. He has an engine. He can run the whole 90 minutes. That's him. And that's what he needs. The other stuff, we'll remain to be seen.
He's a dog, baby.
But no, he's a perfect fit for Pirlo. I love it.
Now the question is, how's he going to deal with the pressure and the off the field distractions? Right, 21 years old, getting a lot of money, playing next to Ronaldo and being a celebrity. Gooch, you got a chance to play for a giant of AC Milan at a time where they were at the highest as a young American.
You didn't see Gooch's face. Gooch like this. Look.
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Sorry, Mr. Champions League quarterfinal over here.
I didn't play for AC Milan, though. I just want to say, I
won an over 30 league one time. But Goose, like, keep it real. Like, it's not as easy and sweet as everybody think it's going to be.
No, it's going to be difficult. I mean, playing in a locker room where you question whether you're the best or the worst on the team, it's a different atmosphere, right? You're coming into a locker room of stars, right? Not to say that Schalke was a bad locker room. Obviously, it was a great locker room, but
it's a step up.
It's more than one step up. You're playing alongside one of the greatest players to ever be on the field, Cristiano Ronaldo, right? Yeah. And you're playing for one of the greatest midfielders to ever play the game in Pirlo, right? And so it's a different level, and I'm sure he's going to expect more out of himself, just like the club now is going to have him under a microscope and expect out of him, be like, because he's an outcast in regards. He's an American midfielder. They're going to be like,
We spoke about that.
Right? Who's this American they're signing at Juventus? What is he going to do? So I hope that he turns head just like Christian did when he signed to Chelsea.
I think he will. I'm excited. I can't wait to watch.
And the good thing is he has the whole preseason to get ready. He signed early. He's not coming in late.
Yeah.
He can be on the ball, on the jump. He's coming into a brand new stadium, brand new history. Yeah. I mean, again, this is a fairy tale situation, man. And Weston, we just want to be very proud of you, kid. Big shouts to Corey Gibbs, his agent, and Team Wasserman for doing a great job. And, hopefully this opens up a big door for a lot of American players to start going to play in Italy.
And big clubs at that.
Big clubs at that, man. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But the problem is, what if he doesn't play?
Well, let's not think about that yet. That's what everyone was saying about Christian, right?
That's what we're here for, though, Gooch.
I'm not here for that. This has been my man's, my brother. I'm trying to see him succeed, especially in this climate. Shoot, there is no what if. He's going to succeed. He's going to turn heads, and he's going to start. That's it.
Yeah, he's going to play.
Well, if you're talking about success and you're talking about playing, you got to mention two of the icons in U.S. national team history. Let's give a big round of applause to our guests, Ali Krieger, Ashlyn Harris.
What's up, ladies? Yeah, y'all gotta come off mute.
Oh, sorry.
You gotta come off
mute. It's perfect timing. What's up, y'all?
Sorry, I've only done Zoom once or twice.
Bees think he's a professional media guy now since he just did CBS that? Champions League. Talking about you gotta come off mute. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm just saying that's what they gotta do. They gotta come off mute.
Hi guys.
These two are gonna argue for
at least
the
twice or three times.
Perfect.
How y'all doing?
Good. We're back in training.
Yes. Oh, yes. Round of applause for that. I felt for you guys not getting a chance to play in Utah. So,
Yeah.
I miss you guys in the field.
Yeah, it was that. You might hear our dog snoring in the background.
These snores are here sometimes too, so watch out.
Hey, man. Anyway, we
spoke a little bit with Sydney about obviously the pride not going to the tournament and how that made her feel. I'm sure you guys devastated. I can't even imagine as veterans, and then at the end to be like, what's going on?
know, like COVID. How did you guys take that? What we didn't actually dive in. What was done after that? Like repercussions.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's been such a weird time, and things have been like so much bigger than sport. Like, as much as it sucks, like there's such a bigger picture right now. So I haven't. I was pretty upset, but I was like, this year's been so weird that I'm not pressed by it. I'm not, like, some people are hit harder.
Yeah, you're over it.
Yeah, it's just like, I'm over this year. And it's like, I don't like have the love and joy and passion to be like playing and performing when like such shitty events are going on. Like, it totally takes the fun and love and like, I don't know. Yeah, like mental. Football is always something like you turn to with your homies, and it's like every day you show up, it's like, man, more shit's going on, more like really hard talks are happening, and like it's super heavy, and it's like like this year has been so exhausting. I'm kind of like overplaying this year, I gotta be honest. Like, I'm not even like, I haven't been that into it.
Yeah.
And it's like, even like showing up today and like, you know, hearing all the teams and what they're doing and boycotting the leagues. Like, I totally get it. Like, when LeBron says, like, man, I don't even feel like playing, like, a lot of us feel the same way.
Yeah, like, you have to put priorities.
I've also taken a backseat, really, this year.
Well, listen, let's not forget, though, you can't just throw away 2020, right? You guys got married. No. You guys got married. Yeah. I got married. Yeah. So, we're still going to celebrate 2020, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know,
no, for sure. There's a lot to be thankful for and grateful for, but we got to dive into a lot of other things right now than football, you know, like as much as, like it's such a platform to create change and like pave the way for people to actually just like educate themselves and listen and show up for other people. So I think that's been the biggest blessing during this whole, you know, situation going on and in our country. So that's been like a good thing, just having such good open and honest conversations with
it's just beautiful,
you know, players on our team.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, football like right now is just kind of like we show up, we're training just because it's, you know, our job, and we're there to do it, but also to kind of have these conversations with our teammates and ask the right questions and kind of bond together and, you know, speak up for what we believe in and speak up for what's right now with these the racial injustice going on. And Ash is absolutely right. I mean, it's not really about football this year, it's about coming together and figuring out how to solve these issues.
We were just talking about earlier of Jacob Blake and how proud we were of not only the NBA players but the MLS players stepping up as well, the WNBA. You know, it's really a great time that we get a chance to see this, but it's still horrific that we have to deal with this. And the mental health, and you spoke on it, the mental health is a big issue that's going to plague all Americans, you know, and what we've been going through and what type of year we had, you know. So it really is hard to sit here and ask you guys about the World Cup when we know so much injustice is going on in the world, you know. And that's why we want to come here and just have a real talk with you guys. And, you know, you guys have blown up, and ever since the Vogue, you know, you guys have the big cover, you guys have been all over the place, and you know, it's not so much we can ask you guys about that we don't really know, or other people don't know, your followers don't know, but so I thought it'd be best we speak about what's going on now and how you guys are dealing with it and what we can do and what solutions can we come up with today to help with this situation. Mr. Professor.
Well, I mean, honestly, first I want to throw this in, they probably forget this because we're little pieces of rubble in your big castle of life right now.
Oh, please.
I don't know if you guys remember back in the day, 2013. I don't know if you guys were on the same team in my charity kickoff event, but these two played.
And
Do you remember? Mookie.
Of course.
Mookie claims he had MVP in that event.
There wasn't no damn trophy. There was no damn trophy.
Listen. They gave it to me by the bathroom, but I got a trophy.
That was really fun. That was in DC or Maryland.
That was my first like one of my first times meeting both of you, because
that was my first time meeting you guys as well.
Via Chris, obviously, because he was training guys, and I was like, hey,
Big shout out Chris Gores.
I was like, these girls are in the area, would they you know, would they want to be involved? He's like, yeah, I think so. I'm like, bring him on, bring him on. You know, that was great. But, and now look at transition 7 years later.
I know, crazy.
Two-time World Cup winners. You guys are freaking superstars on the cover of this, on the cover of that. I mean.
Yeah, it's been wild.
But also that time you guys didn't come out, right? And
no,
that
time, yeah.
And you were together, right? And having to live that way, you know, is something that I was so happy and proud when I saw you guys get married, come out in 2019. You know, I had no idea, obviously, but I started thinking, like, I imagine what you guys were going through to not be able to express yourself in public, you know? Can you speak a little bit about that transition? And is it a little bit weird now that it's, like, so out and open and accepted and you can kind of flaunt it and kind of be proud and not have to kind of hide it a little bit?
I think it was, I mean, all of our friends and family and teammates knew, obviously, but and the closest people in our lives that you know, that matter. So it wasn't really a thing for us. I just feel like it was more so about being professional with, you know, our job and with our employer and with US Soccer. Like, we weren't really sure, like, how people were going to react and if one of us was going to get cut, you know, for being who we are. And
you really had that feeling, though? You really had that feeling? You thought there's a possibility?
Yeah, of course. I mean, and also, like, to lose sponsorships potentially, because this is our livelihood. This is how we make money.
Yes.
Is the national team and our sponsorships. And so I don't think at that time when we were younger, we were really willing to sacrifice that. And also, you know, being public figures, as you guys know, I mean, your information's out there. And
so what was the turning point where you were like, you know, screw it. Like, we're secure and confident that whatever, we're just going to come out and be us.
Yeah. I feel like that was when Jill had left me off the roster in 2017, when I kind of went through that 2 year period where she didn't call me up for camps any longer. And so I think we kind of went through the shift where it was like, all right, I mean, I'm not on the team anymore, and we're just kind of like living our life, and, you know, it's more accepting in our culture. So, you know, like, screw it. Like, we're having a feeling of, like, now we feel like we're hiding when, like, a lot of fans and people know, but it's like, why can't we just be who we are? Why is that a thing? You know? Right. And then after that, like, at the time, the U.S. Soccer president and our head coach and all these people, our GM, had reached out and texted us and said congrats and all this. And it was just like all of our sponsors sent us flowers and gifts. And, like, amazing. It was like,
it was a
big turning point for us. And so we were like, why didn't we do this earlier?
Yeah.
And it just was really organic, and it was natural and very authentic. And I think that's why it felt good at the time.
That's beautiful. I mean, you played at the Spirit together. Now you're playing at the Pride. You played in Europe together as well, right?
We did, but we weren't on the same team. She was playing for Frankfurt, and I was playing for Duisburg.
So who's following who? How is this working? How are you guys structuring this? What's going on?
She was following me.
I like that. Let it be known. Let it be known.
Happy wife, happy life.
So now when y'all do contracts, y'all negotiate together now? Y'all got to be on the same team?
We should.
I mean,
no. She can play for like 3-4 more years.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
Deuces, yeah.
You know, before that. So we'll see. No, but I was already in Frankfurt I played there for like 5.5 years right after college. We didn't have a league in the U.S. So I was like, how am I going to get to the national team? So I was like, I'm not going to play pickup with my guy friends from high school every Tuesday, Thursday night to get there. So, like, I need to go and do something about it. So when I went there, we had met at National Team Camp during the time I was still playing for Frankfurt. So I would come home to the U.S. and go to camps, but then head back to Germany and play my season. So I met her, like, randomly at one of the camps preparing for the 2011 World Cup. And ever since then... Yeah.
Pretty much history.
Yeah. So we were friends for like that first like time period, and then
you know, it's great you talk about Europe because the recent headlines, a lot of the U.S. national team players have been going over to Europe, and the Premier League clubs and the French league as well has been investing more money into the women's programs, into a women's club. How do you guys feel about that? If you were coming out as a young player, I have a close friend of ours, Brianna Pinto, who's coming out of University of Carolina.
Yes.
That's why I brought it up. But also, you know, she has an opportunity now when she comes out. What do you suggest? If you were in her shoes, would you go overseas or would you stay here and play in the States?
I mean, it's different, right? So when we got out of college, there really wasn't like a stable league. Like I went to Europe because the WPS folded and I needed to play. And people will say mixed emotions, like, you know, LA coming in. I mean, these teams are putting in so much money. I mean, three teams are coming in. Like the league is continuing to grow. I think if you would take COVID out of the situation, no one would be leaving. People are leaving right now because they want to play. So I think it's interesting. Someone will probably say, she'll probably say something different. Yeah. I hated it when I went to Europe.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I did not vibe off of like the culture like I thought I would. It was fun for a few weeks, and then I was like,
"You said weeks,
count down
ready
the
to go home."
Weeks, and that was it. Yeah,
I'm ready to go home.
I'm a beach girl. I need my skateboard, my surfboard. I needed people to like hold the door when I walked in and like, have a conversation. Like everyone was like, New York.
Hey. There's some nice people in New York too, you know.
The farm left and right people. I mean, it's just a different culture, you know, and it's like I'm
football wise.
Yeah, I mean, football's great, right? Yeah. I mean, football is definitely.
When you speak on your experience of not liking it, it's more outside of the game than the actual.
I did nothing. I. would go to training, come home, and be like, this sucks.
Yeah, and that's the life of
most. I mean, that's how I was in Germany. When I was in Germany, that's how I was.
That's why you liked it.
I literally trained, I went home, and that was it. I love my other experiences when I was in Holland and other countries, but Germany, oh, man.
I had a different experience. Germany was hard.
You were both in Frankfurt, the city? You were both in Frankfurt? No, we're... What city were
you? I was in Frankfurt and she was in Duisburg, which she was only about like 2 hours, not even like an hour and 45.
Frankfurt's a nice city though.
My enjoyment literally came from driving from Duisburg to Frankfurt because I could go 150 miles an hour. That was my excitement for like the entire time I was there. I'm like, I can get in the car and drive as fast as I want and be as reckless as I want. And I was all the cars were so little. I was goat karting my way to Frankfurt.
I party with Frankfurt. Frankfurt is cool.
I think all players need to go and have that experience just because it like, I don't know, it changed my perspective on the type of person I wanted to become, the type of player and woman I you know am now.
Oh,
I
feel like you have plenty of time to soul search because you're all alone.
I mean, I drank a lot of wine.
Exactly.
And I'm still drinking, so you know.
And I would go to dinner by myself. I'd go to lunch. I don't know. I just feel like I learned a lot when I was over there. Just kind of had this really cool experience. But I also landed on a team with like 7 German national team players.
Yeah.
So like
balling.
I was like set, and I didn't realize that when I was going. I just showed up, and I was like, "Oh, Birgit Prinz," and like.
Did you ever get a chance to meet Alex Meyer over there?
Yeah, actually, I did.
Big Al. Yep. So we went to visit him, and Ricardo played over there as well. So Frankfurt's definitely been.
I went over to Ricardo's house with him and his wife.
Hung out.
So that was cool when he was there because my agent helped him. Get there.
And it's
like,
good food. It's good food in Frankfurt. It's nice Indian restaurants. I mean, you can do your thing. Frankfurt, the first place I went to a bougie. Alex took me to a bougie restaurant, and they were playing hip hop music. They had a DJ, and I looked at all these old white people like, "What is going on here?"
Yeah,
but it was dope. Frankfurt was dope, man. Frankfurt was dope.
I don't know. I loved it. I had a really good time. But yeah, I mean, it just depends on who's on your team.
Everyone's gonna have it.
And the city. That's what I mean.
And the city.
For sure.
But you know, what do you guys think of the how's the league growing here? Is it on the right track? Like you said, Angel City's coming in, spending a lot of money, but is that going to be balanced with what's my guys in Jersey?
Sky Blue.
Doesn't spend a lot of money. I mean, would it be an imbalance? Do you find like the best players in the world are still coming here to play? That's my concern.
No, I don't think the best players in the world are coming here to play. Besides, like, you know, our American players who are obviously the best in the world.
Yeah, you can say that. We have it.
No, but like there are like, I mean, there's some amazing, brilliant players who are not going to come because our league is not the same as over in Europe. So it's difficult to leave for like FIFA dates. And it's just, I wish our league would go, and the MLS, I wish it would go from August until May.
Yeah.
And then everybody would have just an easier transfer, you know, transfer date, transfer period, and it would just be so much more smooth. And I feel like a lot of those players don't come because they don't play, you know, the 11 months out of the year.
I've heard that the salary restrictions as well in the NWSL has forced European players to not want to come
that's true.
But they did just change that, I think, last year.
Because
they
saw
people
leaving. Yeah. So they saw, like, Sam Kerr go to Chelsea from Chicago, and they're like, well, how can we keep these players here? Well, we got to get more money. We got to get more sponsors to put more money into these teams. And we got to get money from the club itself. How are you going to make your club team attractive for these players to stay?
Yes,
you know, I mean, how are you going to make these players happy? And that's a part of it.
I mean, Gooch mentioned in the past episodes about equality of pay, but not necessarily for the U.S. national team, but more importantly for the players in the NWSL.
Yeah, so I always say, you know, you guys have this equal pay with the men's team and everything, and I'm saying great, grand, wonderful, except that's only the top 2% of the women player in the country. So whatever happens to everyone else that makes up your actual professional league, that should, that's where I see equality in the big frame, you know, kind of catching up to the rest. What about you guys?
Yeah, I feel like since U.S. Soccer, we're contracted through them. So there's a certain amount of players who are allocated. And so we get paid by them, which, you know, like frees up that money for the rest of the women to play on the team. So I hope one day it gets to a point where the clubs can pay us just like how the men's side does it. And then
U.S. Soccer wouldn't have to.
Yes.
Exactly. U.S. Right. Soccer would only pay us if we're going into, you know, FIFA dates, right, which is what the men do. Right. Which is, you know, that's like a normal national team.
Yeah.
But because the league ends in, what, November, and then you have 5 months off season, it's like the national team has to continue and has to play. And we have longer camps and because of that.
Well, it's virtually playing for two club teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it is. Yeah. Like, we play for two club teams, and we are owned by two different you know, organization. Like, it's just a weird dynamic. It's like this constant battle.
Do you think it's a battle between the league and the federation, and they're like, well, we're helping you, but you're not, you know, like kind of a tug of war?
They pay our contracts, right? So for them, you know, if they want us out of FIFA dates, they could take us out of FIFA dates because they pay our contracts.
Yeah.
Now a Rose and, you know, a Sam Lewis, they go to Man City and U.S. Soccer has a camp during FIFA dates, they're not going to have that luxury.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as, you know,
I like that. Because we need, U.S. Soccer needs to be on
US
FIFA dates. That might force
knocking
them
on the door and says, I need my players. They're going to be
no
like,
chance.
I pay like, these players right, and they will be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how that dynamic's going to work.
Do you think unless U.S. Soccer should be on the FIFA calendar in terms of the MLS and NWSL?
I can't say much because it's what makes us great.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there is no, like, coincidence why we are so successful. And as much as we're together, as much as
tell
we
us your tell us your secret sauce. I need to know so we can sprinkle some of that on the men's program a little bit.
Yeah. And I mean, even – oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but even, like, even
no,
deeper.
No,
what's the – I mean, because you guys have been so dominant since, you know, Mia Hamm's and, you know.
They say he wants to find out how the hell, how the hell y'all win so much World Cups and they can't even get into that round.
The motivation and, you know, how do you guys keep that same standard every year, year after year? Like, people don't know how hard that is. People look at it as, like, oh, yeah, the women's team, they win because they're good. It's not about that. Real football players, no, it's mentality. It's attitude. Yes. It's how you live. It's how you breathe the game and how you see the game and what have you. So, in you guys, in your eyes, what is it about, you know, the U.S. women's national team that makes you guys so great? The mentality from years to years, the youth players that come into the national team camps and they're already at that level that you guys need them to be to win World Cups. Like, how does that, how do you guys see that?
I think there's like a bunch of different factors that come into play. I think don't be PC either.
Like, give us.
It's like, it's difficult, right? So you're not only competing like currently in current time with current countries, like you're competing against the legacy of people who have come before you that you have to live up to this expectation. To me, I am more fearful of dropping the ball for all of these other people who have paved the way than, you know, when I show up against Germany or let's say Spain or something, the thought of losing, like it doesn't like
exist.
It doesn't even exist. It's like, we have to win every single game or else we don't even want to see what that side looks like, because there's so much pressure of being the best in the world for this long that your motivation is so different. It's like a weird, like every day we have to show up and we already have the mindset of we have no option but to win.
Like, we'll show up to games and literally mentally already think like we're winning. Like, we're going to win, and they have absolutely no chance. And no matter who they are, it's like, we are going to absolutely dominate them mentally, emotionally, physically, like it's done. Even if, say, some random day that we go down a goal, we're still going to win 3-1. You know, it's like, it doesn't even matter. It's like,
there's no doubt in your mind.
There's no panic. Even when we're under
that's
pressure.
Special that you guys never feel that stress, that pit. And it's funny because, like, you won back-to-back World Cups, but I think this last one in 19 was the first time I saw the women's team, not arrogant, but, like, so confident with during the whole tournament. You know, they
I think
4 years prior, you guys were humble winners and, like, quiet and everything, and this time you guys were, like, celebrating and doing all this stuff, and I was like, wow, they're confident in what they're doing. They know they're great.
But I feel like that's also an element that's, like, somewhat of a tactic. Like, I feel like it scares other teams so bad, and I feel like because we are walking the walk and talking the talk, like, we show up to get the job done, and there's so much incentive for us to win because this is our livelihood and this is how we make money. So that's also kind of, you know, played into this winning mentality.
I will say too, like, a big difference is a lot of these players, and I don't know if this is very similar on the men's side, you guys probably could correct me if I'm wrong. Like, we all grow up playing together for, like, you know, thinking back of, I started playing with Pino and a lot of these players when I was 15, 14 years old with the U.S. team. And there's not like flying changes. You guys see it. The rosters are the same throughout till we hit our shelf life and then we're gone. And that's usually about 35. Yeah. I mean, these people.
Not for goalkeepers, though. Not for goalkeepers. Yeah. So
but in men, it's different. Like, we're all contracted. We have, in our contracts, we are protected a lot of ways where coaches can't come in and be like, we're going to bring this person. Yeah. We're going to bring, like, the men's side, there's a lot of times a lot of turnover. There's someone in his, I haven't even heard of this kid. He's 16. He's
I never thought
Europe.
About it. I never thought about it like that.
I'm like, there's all
contracted, and so you can't
the salary's already paid, Gooch. They have to play him.
But so, also, like, our contract gets renewed every January. So you are busting your ass every January, because I'm like, I am to
renew it.
I'm here to get my contract. I'm not here, like, I'm here to take your spot every single year. Yeah. And it's like, I think with that mentality, and you're fighting for, dude, like,
it's 100 games.
Like, what you, what, don't, what, what's your opinion in terms of that?
People don't talk in January. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think in terms, because obviously the men's team is completely different, right? Because you see turnover, yes, like the wind, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think, in your example, it's leaving space for a talent that could have gotten there but don't because of the strict stipulations behind it?
That's why they built the league.
Yeah.
That's your chance. The league is your chance in. If
you can, it's been 8 years, you know? So, it's 8 years of the league. So by this time, there are players. Like, you see, like, a Lynn Williams and a Jess McDonald and these players who are on North Carolina who are breaking through to the national team just because of the league and because they do well in their club team. They're getting rewarded. And it's actually really good to see, because before, when you just have national team, you didn't have a league, you could barely break into the squad, because they would only choose players who had been there through maybe the youth and who have just performed year after year, and you're missing out on all these players. So
and on the women's side, you guys, like, it's so different that nothing is given. It's like, you wait your time. You could be a better player, but there's a veteran in front of you, and it's like, you got to pay your dues. But once you get that shot, you better not blow it.
Yeah.
And it almost preps you for anytime someone goes in. It's like they've been through it a million times. It's not their first cap. They're freaking out. They haven't been prepped. They haven't been in that thin air. Like, these kids have gone through it for years and years and years. So when you guys talk about, you know, these Mallory Pugh when she comes in, or these young players who come in and make these massive impacts,
they've been training for years.
We've been doing that for years. You know?
You don't need to work, like, behind the scenes.
During national team camp, you have, you know, the first team and, say, the second team, but half the time the second team beats the first team. And it's like, no matter who you pick, you're going to be successful. It's like, you have 23 starters, and it's like, just who the coach values more, right? Or the personnel, who fits better together. So you're constantly training every day at a high level, and you're bringing that's the best of the best. And I think that's what also keeps us so sharp and so...
We always say that. We always say we have the first and second best team in the world.
That's so cocky.
That's
gay shit.
That's weird.
Say that. But keep it real. The rest of the world has been catching up. Don't you agree? A little bit? Kind of like the gap is getting a little bit smaller. Sure. Why do you think that is?
They're investing in their women's
leagues. They're putting more money into it. And
look at England. England's league is, like, taking off right now. It's a direct correlation to why their national team's doing well. They're investing. They're putting players in good situations, you know. And it's the same as Spain. Like, they came out of nowhere. Netherlands, like, it's because even Italy, like, there was so many good teams, and it was so enjoyable to watch. It was the first World Cup where anything could have happened. Teams were so good anything, you know, it wasn't a case where we like snoozed through the first few rounds and then we had to wake up when it was like a semifinal game. Like, the world, I mean, every group game, stage, like, everything was
minus the 12-0.
Silent, then you see, like, it's not our job to, like, not score that many goals and perform at our best. It's now their association's job to put more money into the women and invest more to get them to the level that they should be at.
I'll give you a round of applause for that one. I like that.
I knew it was coming. I knew Mook was going to throw it in.
That's the thing, is like, you can't, like, you know, play down just because we feel bad. You know, it's kind of like, listen, like, this is where you should be. This is the standard. So
what do you think about the standard now in U.S. soccer for the women's side? Do you think that it's at a level where it needs to be, or you think we have to kind of up it up a little bit more? I'm going to be honest with you. I think that the style of play for the rest of the countries is a little bit more skilled tactically, a little more technical than the average American U.S. national team that we've seen in the past. Do you think that we're keeping up with that level technically, or you think that that's an issue?
I mean, you have, you know, I think we do have our technical players. You have, you know.
We're way more technical than we've ever been.
Like, you have your Manny Rapinos and your Tobin Heaths and your Kristen Presses who can score from any angle ever, anywhere on the pitch. And you have Rose Lavelle, of course, one of the best players in the world. So, I mean, there are
Crystal Dunn. She's
really elegant. It's like you do have these technical players. But we do, you know, we're just fitter, faster, stronger. And we
and keep it real, that's what really what made you guys so successful.
Yeah. Like, that anyone can keep up with us, I think, for 60 minutes.
Yeah, but not now.
I count on
But what about these teams now that are training year round, that are putting more money into the development of the players? Now they have the culture, they have the style, they have the style of play. And now if they all have the fitness and the strength, don't you think that now?
I just feel like there's one thing lacking you can't teach, and that's mindset.
Mm.
Yeah. Just like what Beasley said, like, it's mentality.
It's it totally.
Yeah.
Like, that is what separates us, and it always has separated us, and that's something you can't teach. And our coach says it every day, who is from England.
Yeah.
You know, was coaching at Birmingham. He's like, you guys are insane.
Beautiful.
Like, it's just like, like, you're machines.
Mm-hmm. And also, we do have a bigger crop of players to choose from. You know, our country is so much bigger. So and nice. I feel like that's also an advantage that we have. You know, what, England's so, like this little bit bigger than the state of Florida, maybe. You know, so if imagine if you had only that amount of players to choose from.
Yeah,
I think that's also really tough.
Hmm. Now let's get a little off the field. And can you talk us a little bit about the things you guys, I mean, I'm so proud of you guys and the way you have always been active and stepping up and having a voice for the people who are voiceless. Talk about a little bit of the organizations and things that you're currently a part of and that you're proud of being a part of.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest, like, you know, the biggest thing that has changed in our life is really trying to focus on our brand outside of soccer and, like, completely living our truth and being vocal about what we believe and using a platform for the better. And, you know, we want to leave the game better than we found it, but we also want to not just be known for the player, you know, the players we are, but better yet, the people we are. So I think leaving behind like a legacy where people will like remember and talk about you in a really high manner is important to us. And what has drawn us, you know, attracted us for all these years. And, you know, I do think living our authentic truth and living our life to the fullest and being very open and honest and bringing people in and making them feel a part of our causes and what we're doing has been so such a big turning point in our life. But there's so much stuff we're fighting for. You know, first and foremost, it started off with, you know, fighting for women, for women equality and social equality and economic, like every part of it. Like, we know we are behind and we are privileged and there's so much we can be doing. And every turn we meet, there's other people we need to bring to the table to fight for. And it can't just be women's soccer, but women across all industries.
Definitely.
And, you know, I'm a big advocate and I support like a lot of mental health platforms. To Write Love on Our Arms is one of them.
What's that called?
To Write Love on Our Arms. It's a nonprofit. Yeah. For addiction, depression, self-harm and suicide.
Beautiful.
And then we just recently started doing stuff for the Trevor Project, which same thing. And not many people know, but September is National, you know, World Suicide Prevention Month. And it's really, really important time right now.
You mind if we could speak about that a little bit? Have you ever gone through depression?
I don't know. I think we all go through something. Yeah. Like, I've never been like clinically diagnosed with anything, but I think like I'm good sitting with like real raw feelings. Like if I wake up and I'm having a hard day, like I give myself grace and I know that I need to rest. Like, I give, you guys. Like, I give people everything and all of me, and there are times when I need to just rest. Yeah. And I give myself the chance to do that so I can recharge and be ready to be impactful the next day. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, I wake up and live every day, and I want to be hopeful for a better place for my children. Definitely. I don't have children, but I sure as hell don't want to raise them in what I'm living in right now. And
is that a segue to the near future?
I hope so. I definitely hope so. But I know, yeah, like, I'm creating change, and I'm trying to be hopeful for a better day for my future children. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to work, and do whatever I can to make this a place where we all feel safe. Especially, you know, we do a lot in the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to constantly push the envelope and figure out a way where we all are equal. Like, mm-hmm, we're all free and we're all safe, and we can wake up and not have to feel that politics or anything else, you know, gun violence, are taking things away from, like, our groups of people. But how is it where we can all come together and we can all be, like, truly one? And that's the question right now, right? That's what we're trying to figure out.
You need communication to figure that out, you know. And that's why, yeah, I'm so glad you guys are here. And my co-hosts always get mad at me because I always ask questions that's not on the list and that we didn't talk about, and we didn't prep about. But, you know, I think for me, having a chance to have you guys in the room and having a conversation, especially me and my two brothers are feeling about what's going on now, to hear your point of view, but also for people you've spoken to, I think it only helped somebody who's listening, you know?
I think also something that's so attractive about, you know, our team and our club team as well, and that, like, so many people can kind of, I guess, are attracted to each and every one of us because we do fight for what we believe in, and yeah, we do speak up on topics that, you know, we feel need change. And I think that's something that's really attractive about us, that we're not just footballers, we actually, you know, have substance, and we can, you know, fight for these issues, and you guys
are role models.
Yeah, I feel like that's what's so great about, you know, our teammates too, is everyone is using their platform for good, and they're really trying to speak for those who don't have a voice and speak for those, you know, people standing in the back. And I think that's really important for us to continue down this road. And, you know, people are listening. Especially when we're, you know, on the biggest stage and we're winning trophies and this and that, it's all great and grand. But at the end of the day, it's how can we make this world a better place, and how can we, you know, get people on board with.
And you guys believe, though, yeah, that you guys believe that we can really get everybody looking at each other equally and treat each other.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I truthfully do. And it comes with, you know, you talk about role models, you talk about leadership, like, you got to have, like, a leader that's willing to see the same, you know, like, see eye to eye with us and see that we're all equal and see, mm-hmm, that we're all one. And till that happens, we're going to be putting out fires left and right, you know, like, because we're fighting to fit. Like, we're fighting, mm-hmm, it's like magnets right now. We're all flipped, yeah, right now. We're not together, and we're fighting, like, this crazy battle that we're not going to get anywhere until we have the leadership that's willing to, like, kind of set the way. And
we have to be the ones to, like, change that.
My biggest thing is you don't have to be a role model. You don't have to have this crazy platform, mm-hmm, to create change. I think the people sitting back being like, well, I don't really have a voice, no one's going to listen to me, like, that's where you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
You know, like, that's where we need you too. Like, we need people to step up and, like, act and, like, vote and all these big, mm-hmm, things that come around in a time like this. And, yeah. Like,
how do you change people's hearts, though? Meaning, like, you can have policies, but if the person who has the power to implement that policy doesn't feel that way, doesn't have that compassion, doesn't have the heart, a lot of times it won't get implemented, right? It won't get changed. So in saying that, like, I don't know. I'm just putting it out
there. I just feel like they're going to be left in the dust because we're all going to be coming together and we're going to be fighting for change. And so, I think
majority of the people you think are for the better and have more of a compassion for each other than not in this country. You think a majority of people have compassion for other races and genders and respect for
Now when we keep electing white men and older men in the office, no, I don't think anything will ever change. I think people are so scared of change.
I do think that voting is power, and voting is one of the most influential and impactful things you can do, not only for yourself, but for your community. Yep. And I think that people need to believe that, and they need to start showing up. You need to start signing up for your absentee ballots. You need to start showing up to the polls in November and start preparing, even for the smaller elections in your community, in your city, in your town. Like those
matter.
Those matter, and those create change. And we have to be the ones to do it. And just because you think your vote doesn't matter, it actually does. And if you're not voting for yourself, then vote for your kids, or vote for your future grandkids. Or it's just
how do we change the American who's living in the boondocks of Virginia or the boondocks of Wisconsin and who doesn't have any type of relationships with other ethnicities except for on television, for them to understand or care? How do we change that? Do you guys, I mean, I'm sure you guys have gone through trying to change or trying to deal with people who don't feel the same way you have, right?
Yeah, and to clarify, obviously, Bees, myself, and Mauricio being African-American, you know, we have certain experiences. And so it's great to hear from you guys who are Caucasian women that are expressing this, you know, this anger, this disdain in what's going on. And a lot of times, you know, especially when the riots started happening, my phone was being blown up. Everybody wanted to talk. And it was like a TED talk every 2 minutes. And a lot of times I was thinking, like, I can't answer the question for you. You guys have to find the answer within yourselves, within your communities, and figure out why you feel this way or why it's even gotten to that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think it's our job as white people to change white people. And I think it's our job to educate ourselves and not, you know, ask others for the answers. And I feel like it's our job to do the work. I can't imagine how tiring it is after, 400 some years to suffer through this oppression and feel like having that fear every time you walk out of your house, that you could possibly lose your life just by being who you are. And I think it's our job to do the work, and we won't be tired, and we're going to continue to fight, because like Ashlyn said before, none of us are free until we all are free. And so we have to do the most on our platforms. We can't maybe reach every single person, and you know, the I don't want to, you know, in the farms of Virginia, or you know, which is totally fine if you
yes, and we love farms of Virginia. We love farms of Virginia. As long as you're not racist.
Virginia, but like, shout out. But you know, we're not going to reach every single person, but if you can do your part in your community and you can continue to encourage your friends and family and encourage them to educate themselves, especially Ashlyn and I and our families,
we try to do our family
a little bit more conservative. All the time. We are continuing to have hard conversations. And that's where I think the change will happen, if you just kind of do your part, in your smaller community, and then hopefully other people are doing their part, and it's kind of the puzzle pieces will then eventually fit together.
Love is contagious, just like hate is.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Absolutely.
The more you spread it, the more it's going to catch on.
And you guys do a great job spreading that. And like I said, Gooch said, you know, not only are you role models, you're great role models, and you're great for the game, you're great for off the field. We're huge fans, and we're just so excited and thankful that you guys came on to just chop it up with us, give us a little insight. Bees had a question that I wanted him to ask because he's never given me a gift. So.
What? wait. What question is that? Wait.
Who gives the best or worst gift between you two?
Why are you drinking down there?
What? Oh, I got
He's drunk. He's drunk his eyes.
I'm tired.
This is a happy hour. I heard you guys have a happy hour.
I have a 6-year old and I work from home, so it's a long day.
Are you doing the homeschooling, the virtual learning, or the?
No, she just started going back. Yeah, so she's gonna go back. That summer was
Hold on. This is my last argument, BZ. You just said you had a long day, 6 year old at home, but then you said she went back. So what is it? Is she homeschooling or is she went back?
It's only been a couple days.
She's still tired.
I'm still catching up. Yeah, I'm still tired. From five months, I've been tired. Now I get it.
But listen, I just hope you guys get a chance to get on that field and get a chance to express yourselves and get back to what you you guys are about. I hope that all the things you guys are involved with, if you ever need us to be a part of it to spread the word, please call Gooch only. And
you're like, lose my number.
Nah, I was joking, man. But again, we just want to say much love and we want to say thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you guys.
Oh, and by the way, this is a Merlot. I had to add that.
We'll send you one of our favorites.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah.
I'm a wine drinker, so.
Thank you guys, and for what you guys do.
Yeah,
and,
we appreciate it.
We've looked up to you too since you know we played on the national team, and just appreciate everything you do to support us as well. I think we need more men to support the women, and so we appreciate that.
We love you guys.
We love you guys.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Have a good night. Bye.
There you go. The legends.
The legends.
I finally got to talk to real World Cup players.
Real World Cup winners.
Real World Cup winners. That's what it feels like to be damn. But, you know, I love what they talked about, the mentality. You know, I think that, you know, you win and lose games when you step on the pitch and you have that belief and the other team can feel it too.
You know? Yeah, but you know, that's the reason why I want to ask that question, because a lot of people don't understand how hard that is to do.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? I'll speak about me. I've been in teams with Chicago my first year. We had a winning mentality. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was that year, the players we had, the coaches that we had a winning mentality. Same when I was with PSV, Scott, the same. But they do it every single year. Yeah.
Every single game.
It doesn't matter from when I talked about. Yeham and her days, and now it's, you know, the Roosevelts and, you know, Carly Lloyd. Mm-hmm. Now, so it hasn't changed.
But that's the thing. When Ashton was explaining, she's like, we have such a weight that we have to not even live up to ourselves, but live up to what was before.
Exactly.
Yes.
I'm
like,
that's crazy. Yeah. Heavy. And I think that was such so powerful for her to say, because I really wanted to know what's the secret sauce, as Gooch like to say.
Secret sauce.
What was the secret? You know what I'm saying?
Well, listen, man, I just want to say that, you know, always a great show. I miss you guys. Great to be back. Gooch, take us away, please.
Well, I was hoping that we wouldn't have to be in this climate again. You knew it. I knew it, but I was hoping not this soon. I mean, let's think about it. But, you know, it's in a tunnel of darkness, there's always a little bit of light, and having Ashlyn and Allie on, you know, shows that, you know, what they're working towards, and not just for themselves in their community, but for the African-American community in the country, and pushing towards equality, you know. And for me, that's beautiful. So, you know, big ups to them, and, you know, I love you boys.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, again, subscribe, comment, review, show us some love.
Send some Merlot to Bees.
Yes.
No.
Allie, Ashlyn, please send me some Merlot. Yes.
All right. Big shouts out to y'all. Much love. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.